Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Line. I'm Brian Lehrer. The latest twists to the fundraising. This is On the Line. I'm Brian Lehrer. There we are. Four different theme songs that we used at different times on this show. And we're playing them because those four pieces of music span the time that our next guest has been with this program. We close today by saying goodbye to my number one partner in bringing you this program for nearly the last 8 years. You have heard her name in the credits countless times. When I say the executive producer is Nuala McGovern. Now Nuala McGovern is moving to London with her husband, who is being transferred there. And in just a second, you will actually hear this behind-the-scenes voice and some producer's choice excerpts from her time with the show and her five secrets to producing a talk show that you're not allowed to tell anyone. But I'm going to embarrass Nuala a little first by saying that no one could have been a better partner for this insane period of time that we spent working so closely from around, let's say, Bush versus Gore. That was insane, right? Through 9/11, we were evacuated together from our Lower Manhattan studios. Through the Iraq War, the 2008 presidential campaign, and now the economic crisis, even as people like Jim McGreevy and Elliot Spitzer provided some comic relief along the way. They say that if things go well on a show like this, the host gets all the credit. If things go poorly, the producer takes all the blame. Well, I'm here to tell you folks that things have gone pretty well around here during Nuala's tenure. And she gets a ton of credit for everything from the Peabody Award we won last year and all that goes into that, to her perfect pitch for what makes the show sound right, to knowing how to laugh when things are at their worst, to making everyone love to work with her, to telling me when to shut up, which is a perfect cue for the producer's entrance. Hi, Nuala.
Hello, Brian. How are you?
I'm good. And before we even talk and we play some of these clips that you've been dredging up the last few weeks, and as a crowd gathers, I think everybody who ever worked at the station is currently gathering outside
the
window.
That's quite a crew.
That is quite a tribute to you. We also have a comments page for this segment, folks, and because Nuala is moving to the UK, she's moving to London, as I said, we want your insider tips for what to do in London. And this will be, you know, the expression of love from the listeners who never heard your voice before but heard the product of your work. Insider tips for those of you who know London. What should Nuala do in London? Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. But before you say goodbye, you have to say hello. You grew up in Dublin, the daughter of a news junkie who owned an Irish pub. And I always thought that was a recipe for raising a broadcast news producer.
I think that's right. You know, one of my earliest memories, there might be a few people that don't agree with this parenting ritual, but my father used to pick me up from kindergarten and bring me straight to the pub. But he wouldn't be finished his shift for a number of hours, so he would plonk me down with a bottle of soda and leave me with some of the old guys to have a good old chat about what was happening that day. So I was probably more up to speed with a lot of football scores, pigeon racing, and what was going to be on the news that night than the average four-year-old.
Pigeon racing?
Oh, yeah, there was Pigeon's Corner. That was my usual haunt.
From the website already, Melanie, I have but one insider tip. Look right. Relocating to London won't mean much if you get clocked by a bus on your first day. Good
Thanks,
luck.
Melanie. I'll watch out for that.
Now, you've been going over some of the tapes of the show all these years because you will be looking for work over there. And so you've been kind of compiling an audition reel of excerpts from the program that you think will make employers want to hire you. And so you've been screening 8 long years of talking about everything from the war to 9-year-olds who ride the subway by themselves. Let's hear what you actually think made some good radio along the way. Let's hear some producer's choice excerpts, and your five secrets for producing a talk show. You want to go into secret number one?
Sure. I think number one is accept that you're going to have to break a few eggs in the name of public service.
Uh-oh.
So what does that mean? That means really that sometimes you've got to ask that tough question, even though it mightn't be what the guest wants. Brian always asks the question. Even the guest can decide whether they want to answer or not. But I thought what illustrated this might be when we went in 2003, as Brian had mentioned, 9/11 and President Bush being elected really was the beginning of our time capsule together. And from those two things that happened, really, the news then evolved out of those two events up until now. I mean, it's so interesting when you see things like Guantanamo Bay, etc., that are still in the news now with President Obama signing legislation to close them. So I thought we'd go back to 2003. We had the opportunity to travel to London, and we did a co-broadcast with the BBC World Service.
It was a worldwide call-in.
It was amazing. It was a global call-in. And I mean, it's global here every day in New York. But this we did with Robin Lustig, who some of you may know his voice from NewsHour in the 9 o'clock hour in the morning here. And it was called Exporting Democracy. And we had this concept of, you know, whether you can export democracy, and that was the premise of the call-in. And President Bush, just about 2 days before we actually did the broadcast, gave this big, wide-ranging speech on that particular topic. So we had access to Adnan Pachachi. He was Iraqi's foreign minister back in the 80s, but he had been part of the Iraqi Governing Council, which was the first provisional government of Iraq. And we had a caller from Iraq, an Iraqi called Riyad, and he had said that he would not recognize the Iraqi Governing Council because it was put there by the Americans. So Brian expertly paraphrased that question. So I thought maybe we'll take a listen to that tape and to Adnan Pachachi's response.
You serve at the pleasure of the Americans who had to approve the council membership.
We do not serve at the pleasure of anybody. We have appointed ourselves. And in fact, we did that in response to the Security Council Resolution 1483, which said supports the Iraqi people to form an interim administration. And that's precisely what we did.
Is the call still there?
And we are trying, excuse me, and we are trying now to go through a constitutional process whereby a constitution can be enacted by Iraqis, elected by Iraqis, and then it will be submitted in a referendum to the Iraqi people, and then the elections would be held under international supervision for the government, for a government that will derive its legitimacy from the consent of the people. So what this person has been saying is utter nonsense and abusive, and I really find it extraordinary that you should allow people like that to use the airwaves.
So he was so ticked off, even at the original question, that when I was just trying to bring the caller in for a follow-up, I said, is the caller still there? He would, excuse me. So you got to break a few eggs.
You got to break a few eggs, exactly. And I just thought that the next clip that I pulled is actually from 2006, but it was Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, who was on with Leon Panetta, who now is, of course, CIA director. But at the time, they were part of the Iraq Study Group, which had, like, assess Iraq, etc., and trying to make some recommendations. Actually, going back listening to that, it was like, get the military out of Iraq at the beginning of 2008, which is so interesting going back and listening
That's
to that
right.
interview. But you're masterful in this, and this is what I think, like, really created a good interview. And you didn't totally break the egg here. Sandra Day O'Connor remains composed, but you managed to slip in the middle of the Iraq study group, this big discussion on the recommendations. Just indulge me, and may I ask you another question? And here's what the question was.
And my other question is, here in my city, despite the Surrender Monkeys New York Post cover, my city, which voted 75% for Al Gore, you will always be remembered by many as the deciding vote to elect President Bush. Can you tell New York for posterity, in layman's terms, why did you vote to deny the state of Florida the right to recount votes in its own state?
Well, Florida had the opportunity to recount votes and did, but it had... The court found that the Florida courts were not correctly applying federal law in the election process there. And after the decision of our court became final, there were three separate recounts of the votes in the counties that were affected by the decision. And those were conducted by members of the media. And in none of those votes would the result have changed. So indeed, the Florida vote count was as it was, very close indeed, but it went in favor of George Bush.
I guess you never second-guess yourself on that one.
Well, I don't know that I need to.
And there again, it's just that little follow-up. So you never second-guess yourself on that one, which was obviously a way of second-guessing her, that got her back up a little bit. And one way or another, you don't have to hit people over the head to break the eggs.
I know, exactly. So that's just one of the rules of producing. Don't be afraid to cancel that guest. Don't be afraid to ask that tough question.
Rule number two,
be ready to turn on a dime, over-prepare, make a plan, change it. In particular, watch out for governors.
And I said they provided comic relief.
They did indeed. Well, we've had so many instances over like one quiet afternoon trying to decide what could the lead story be. Then my computer didn't work. And guess what was happening this time? Here's a little clip from that particular afternoon when we had to rush to get to air.
The power is totally out up here. There's nothing on. People who are trying to enter the subway are finding out that the trains are not running at all and they're coming down. The escalators obviously are not working, so they're walking up and down the escalators. As far as all the stores, there's a lot of delis and small restaurants around here. The store owners are saying that they are going to lose everything today, all of their inventory that they have as far as any perishables go. One man told me that he's been here.
All right, now I was actually on vacation during the blackout. That's one of the bits of history that we laugh about. Every time I go on vacation, something weird and memorable happens.
So true.
Jim McGreevy coming out and saying he was a gay American. Little things like Iraq invading Kuwait.
And in this case, Gonzalez, finding Saddam Hussein. Let's not even go down that list.
But in this case, the blackout. And you were working at your computer, the computer went out, and suddenly you realized we have to go on the air.
Exactly. And Beth Fertig and Richard Hake did it. John Keefe, our news director, he kind of set it up with some sticky back plastic and a pair of scissors and managed to get us on the air.
And so. That was reporter Alicia Zuckerman, who was working here at the time. Rule number three.
Rule number three is, even though it's radio, it pays to have eyes like a hawk. For the simple reason being, you could be in that studio, we've got 10 lines, you never know who might be calling in. Here's somebody we just noticed happened to be calling.
Wait a minute, I'm getting a flash from the screening room here, is it? Guess what, after a half hour of talking about Senator Hillary Clinton, she's calling in. So let's welcome her. Senator Clinton, are you there?
I am there, Brian. How are you?
I'm okay. Thank you for calling. All right. And we don't have to replay this clip. She was calling to defend her military record, believe it or not, when she was first lady. The caller had accused her of forcing everybody who was in uniform to take off their uniforms. Because
and wear
she,
civilian clothing.
Wear
Brian,
civilian
finish that.
thank you for for adding the second part of that, because she allegedly hated the military. But in your capacity as producer,
it's to see that and it's to understand and to turn that round as quickly as you can. You know, it could be, it just adds to the conversation. You're looking for that other unexpected, unpredictable moment that's going to enrich the experience of the listener and really add something to the conversation. So, and it's not always the celebrity, it's just trying to understand that great call.
If you're just joining us, we are saying goodbye to our long-term executive producer, Nuala McGovern, who is moving to London, moving with her husband, really, who got a job transfer over there. And she is going over the Great Pond, not far from where she started out, Dublin, Ireland. But we're asking you, our listeners, to give your insider tips about London to Nuala. Some of the other things coming in case you want to know, Nuala, the best thing to do in London is go to Paris. Great access to the Channel. Stephanie from New Jersey writes, just once go to the Chelsea Flower Show. Go early in the morning before the huge crowds and look at the perfect vegetables, flowers, roses, and various things displayed inside. Melanie writes, we got Melanie already. Ken from London. Like playing poker, I'll take you to the Imperial Club in the city.
That sounds interesting.
Do you like playing poker?
Maybe I should start. I wanted
five producers' tips. Again, if you're just joining us, Nuala's leaving us with the five secrets of success, which you have to promise not to share with anyone, to being a great producer.
So I'm wondering, should I go to one more call within number three?
No, I think we should move on. Four,
okay.
Yes.
So let's move on. This is have a creative definition of research. You heard my research started when I was four, talking to some of the old guys in my father's bar. But Google is not the answer. You need to have a life, socialize, get out and talk to people. I find taxi drivers are a real font of information. Drop an issue into the conversation. And if it provokes discussion, it's probably going to work on the radio. Because basically what we're trying to do here is get all the different parts of your life and bring them here. Not just always news or politics, but we want to know like how you're parenting your kids in the city, how you are managing your career, all those things. So here's a clip on the trials and tribulations of parenting. I'm not a parent, but I still find it fascinating for talk radio at times. And here's a clip.
So I want to welcome back Lenore Skenazy, columnist at the New York Sun. She recently wrote an article about something she lets her 9-year-old son do, something that a number of her readers and maybe a number of you listeners as well, judging by the beginning of our comments page on this, found shocking, horrifying, astonishing. What act of New York City parenting could provoke such a reaction? Well, I told you before the break. She didn't hand him a bottle of Brooklyn Lager and tell him to drink it up or take him to see a Quentin Tarantino film. Okay, Lenore.
No, I didn't. I didn't say, here's $20, go get some crack, please bring it home fast, I'm jonesing. No, what I did is I let him take a subway by himself, and I had no idea when I wrote this piece that it would provoke, my God, the kind of response it has provoked. It's surprising to me.
Surprising, yes, and in another way, not, because it's one of those things that everybody has thought about. So that's what I'm often trying to do as a producer, and my other producers are too, trying to find those things that people are talking about. We want to reflect the city. We want to reflect the city both in the programming and the people that are on the air and also the topics they're talking about.
All right. Rule number five. This is really going to be fun to listen to, because this is where you get to pull your favorite callers, right?
Exactly. So I've a few. There are so many. I really just narrowed it down just to a minute. There have been so many, and I just want to say thank you to all the callers who have called in and made this show such a joy to produce. So my number five is know thy audience, know thy host. So with the audience, it's to get them involved and trust they will come through for each other. You know, the listener has been, we have done call-ins on the first-time voter, Democrats, Republican, as an undecided, the soccer moms and the NASCAR dads. We've called in how it is to live with HIV, how religions affect your politics, your environmental sins, the MTA, the smoking ban, and performing Hajj. And we've asked you to rename City Field, what makes a real Brooklynite, to share the strangest news you've received by text. And you've helped your fellow listeners on so many things, everything from what to do first when you lose your job, how to find cheaper healthcare. And you've called from the tub while being stopped for jaywalking, from the voting booth and sitting in your parked car while waiting to move it. So to that point, I just want to get to the next clip. It starts with Brian asking about renaming City Field. The second one is Jean, who won our political satirical haiku. The John you hear her refer to is John Ashcroft, who was then U.S. attorney. And there was a Spirit of Justice statue with an exposed breast that he paid, well, the Justice Department paid $8,000 to have curtains to cover the menacing breast.
Mary in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary.
Oh, hi.
You got one?
Just as, you know, kind of a joke, but how about Debits Field?
Debits Field. If it's not Ebbets Field, why not Debits Field?
Why not Debits Field? You know.
Mary, you are the first caller, and I don't think anybody is going to beat you in this whole segment. And the first ever satirical haiku jam first prize winner is this haiku from Jean from Staten Island.
John orders a bra, an underwire or soft cup, the menacing breast.
And you told my screener that a teacher needs a lot more than test scores
and
for tenure.
A teacher needs a lot more than test scores. This thing can't be based alone on test scores.
How do you measure as a principal? How did you measure? And if you can, turn off your radio because we're getting...
I can't get... I'm in the tub. I can't get the radio. Leave that off, honey.
That's a first-time admission for a Brian Lehrer Show caller. You love that call.
I love joy. Joy. This show has been joy. It's been brilliant. Yes.
All right.
So I
now,
love her.
Now, one more tip about London. Somebody wrote in, as Marge Simpson said, remember, A mile is called a kilometer, an elevator is called a lift, and botulism is called steak and kidney pie.
Okay, I'm going vegetarian. Thank you.
So, listener quoting Marge Simpson. Now, up until now, Nuala, everything we have done with you, our outgoing producer, has been planned for this segment. Now we're going to add a little surprise. Mm. Also joining us in the studio, where is he? Is another former producer who also came from Ireland, Jim Colgan. I used to call Nuala and Jim my right hand and my other right hand until Jim, turncoat that he is, left for the takeaway.
That's right.
You also may remember, folks, that Jim used to come on air sometimes as our crowdsourcing creative director. But Jim is here now with his deep, pub-rich knowledge of all things Irish to play a short little, we have about a minute for this, a one-minute game. It's called, Is That a Nuala-ism or Is It Just Irish? And the reason is that...
I love it.
Nuala McGovern is full of, let's say, unusual expressions. For every person, every situation, it seems that Nuala has some kind of unusual expression that those of us from the U.S. have wondered, is that a Nuala-ism or is it just Irish? So Jim is here to set the record straight on a list of a few things new to American ears that our office mates have heard Nuala say over the years.
Well, Jim. That's right. It's about an observation that everybody who starts in this office has a bit of confusion about how Nuala speaks. So that's what we've colloquially called Nuala-isms. And the number one thing, and I think Nuala you'll won't disagree with me here, because I say it myself, is your man.
Your man.
Anytime someone comes in, people say, who is she talking about? My man? I don't have a man. And if I do, he's not here.
Is that a Nuala-ism or is that just Irish?
It's a bit of both. Because Nuala's been here a long time, so she doesn't really have an excuse to keep saying your man. So I think it's a Nuala-ism because she insists on saying it.
And the feminine version is?
The feminine version is your one, with no consistency involved. W-A-N, that is. So you say your man and your one, as in, is your man in the studio yet? Or is your one there yet? And everyone knows what she's saying.
And we've heard Nuala a million times say, head the ball.
Head the ball.
I have no idea what that means.
You know, it doesn't really make sense to me either, and I never say it. So I think that's definitely a Nuala-ism, but it's definitely rooted in an
Irish-ism. Should I chime in?
Yeah. Please.
Right, it's like a football. It's a soccer thing. You have that guy. He comes in. He heads the ball to make the shot. It's that guy. It's that person that's making the action. So has head the ball come through? That could be has the guest come through.
And I actually went to look up this online, and it, obviously it is soccer terminology because you do head a ball in soccer, football as we say. But I think it might be that when you head a ball, your feet aren't on the ground, or maybe you've head the ball a bit too many times and you're, you know, lost a few brain cells because usually it means someone who's a bit distracted.
So there we go.
Can I say one more thing?
You have 10 seconds,
okay,
literally.
The most one is it's the term cop on. And I think Nuala knows exactly what I'm talking about. It just means sense. You can use it as a noun, as a verb. You tell someone to cop on. And I just have to say that Nuala has the most cop on out of anybody I ever have met.
Oh, thank you.
And it's the number one trait in a producer.
So here's the thing, folks. If anyone listening right now is an employer at the BBC or anywhere else in London producing news or talk, radio or television, you really have only two choices. Hire Nuala McGovern right away, or sit idly by as your competition hires her and watch them bury you. It's your choice. Just don't say I didn't warn you. Nuala McGovern, Godspeed, best of luck, and thank you for everything.
Oh, thank you, Brian. It's been a real privilege to have you as my partner for the past decade.
I remembered how I swore that I'd come back to you one day. And as the sunset came to meet the evening on a hill, I told you I'd always love you, I always did, I always will. Very well, gone away, there's nothing left to say. But say adieu to your eyes as blue as the woods are in the bay. To pitch into a man of war who was often heard to say, I'm a free-born man of the USA. I'm a free-born man of the USA. I'm a free-born man of the USA.
The song sung by the Pogues, which is a going-away song for those of you who know The Wire. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.